This piece is called Universal Larynx. When a woman opens her mouth, the tides reverse. When a woman opens her mouth, earth shifts. When a woman opens her mouth, dogmas crack, tyrannies fall, the stock market suffers a loss. Boys drool. When a woman opens her mouth, someone turns up the music, and people avert their eyes from her face. There is a howl of rage and the snap of releasing bone. When a woman opens her mouth, women starve, the word sister stuck in their throats. A boy flinches. When a woman opens her mouth, men relax, girls feel safe, there is plenty of water to drink. Fear consumes her. When a woman opens her mouth, she sings or screams, bites or suckles, destroys or lovingly soothes. When a woman opens her mouth, her lips shape language. I sometimes understand.
So Sandra Allen, what makes Sandra Allen, Sandra Allen?
I call myself a writer, performer, and photographer, to make it simple. Because the performance that I do is sometimes poetry and sometimes other things. So that's mainly where it's at. And I'm an activist as well for women's issues and anti-racism and anti-heterosexism, I think is the latest term.
Well, how long have you been an artist?
I've been writing, I guess, professionally for about 7 years. I don't know when you start counting, but I received my first official rejection letter about 7 years ago, so there you go. And photography is quite new, probably almost 3 years. And performing, I've been doing since, I guess, since I was a kid, but we won't tell anyone about those things, mainly since university. Yeah.
And what have you encountered in your life, like, as a woman artist?
Well, I mean, most of the established artistic community is, there are pockets of difference and pockets of change, but overall things are still run by the big boys, the straight white men. And I guess trying to make a balance between, you know, needing to get published or wanting to get published, but most of the places where a person's going to get published are these magazines that don't publish things by women very often, especially not feminist things with titles like Feminist Fatale. It's not going to be on the top of their, you know, priorities, but so I guess, yeah, there have been challenges to having a different voice, also having a queer voice. Other challenges, like just in terms of performance, I find people like to categorize me as a performance poet, and therefore maybe not publish something I wrote because, oh my God, that's performance poetry, the difficulty. Yeah.
You've always been very honest. Mm. Your pieces come really from within and talk about all these experiences that you have gone through, mm-hmm. and not in a very superficial way. You've always been very genuine and very open, like with your experiences. You really put yourself out there.
Mm-hmm. It's just the way I write. I don't really think about it very much. I think maybe if I thought about it more, I'd actually not say these things. So it's good that I don't consider too much what impact it might have. In some ways, it's a strange line, with poetry, because people often assume everything you write is true, especially when you do often write things that are from your heart and that are very honest. But I've written a few fictional pieces, and people often assume they're also about me, so it's a weird thing, because people go, oh, I didn't know that happened to you.
How has it been, like, the community, the artist community, like, in terms of, like, the writers community in Toronto, towards your work? And
there's been a lot of support in Toronto from certain, like, there's a lot of different pockets of writers, and there have been some, like, there are a lot of really amazing women right now doing their own thing. A lot of women doing things. Jennifer Lovegrove's doing Dig magazine. She does it all by hand. She used to make her own paper as well, but she creates that. And then there's Emily Pulwiri, who's been doing Kiss Machine, and Paola Poletto, I think, is also working on that. And Andrea Griffiths did The Unheard, which is specifically a women's magazine. There's a few reading series that are just for women and for queer women, like Clit Lit. I mean, some people are more supportive than others, but I guess that happens in anyone's career. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do find overwhelmingly things are still pretty male-dominated in terms of reading series. All of them but one, I think, are run by men right now, all of the main reading series. And that could be just because, you know, they're the only people who want to do it, or it could be for deeper reasons, I don't know. I also find that the main writing community in Toronto is pretty white. There are a few, there's Mocha Lounging, there's a couple black reading series, but overall there's not a lot of integration. There's
in the audience too.
In the audience as well. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty white overall, and that's it's an interesting question, like, because I talk to people and they say, well, it's because, you know, those people just aren't interested, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, that doesn't really cut it. There's got to be something else going on. You're not appealing to audiences beyond a certain class and race and blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of work to be done, I think, in sort of in terms of opening up the community. A lot of people get defensive when you bring up issues of representation from different communities. It's a weird place to be in, like, because all of a sudden people just kind of go, well, it's not my fault, and it's like, well, I wasn't exactly pointing fingers, and just want to say, how can we improve this situation? How can we change this?
What have you been working on in the past years?
I just finished writing a play with my friend Heather Lash, and we're sending it to the New York Fringe Festival, hoping that we'll get a spot in there. And it's about two women on a blind date, and they keep screwing it up, and they keep getting a new chance. It keeps rewinding, and they try again and try again until they get it right. And then I'm working on a project at the Theater Center, which is it's sort of a collaborative effort. We're not really writing a script at the moment. We're only creating characters. So I'm creating a character of a mother, which is interesting for me because I'm not one. But I might be doing another installation of All About Us, what we call More About Us. I have my photography show coming up in May, so I'm a little overbooked.
Yeah, but now maybe we should talk a little bit about the photography.
Yeah, I'm doing... the project is called Play, and it's part of Contact 2002 in May. And essentially, there are two main things to it. I'm looking at racist and sexist children's toys, and then I'm also looking at the much-used metaphors of women as landscape and women as canvas. And so I have things like a woman's breast being run over by a construction toy, and little army figurines, and invading a woman's body, but also there's a lot of humor involved in it. It's not just like, oh my god, that's horrific. There's a lot of humor, and there's also a lot of resistance in, from the women themselves. And the projects have been mainly collaborative, working with ideas from the other women who are Corey Hodson, Allison Reese Cummings, and Heather Lash. And so their ideas we've worked together on that. And like I was just telling you, I'm going to have a soundscape of mini interviews with a lot of other women talking about their experience with children's toys and things like that, and what they played with and what they weren't allowed to play with and what they think other kids shouldn't be playing with. Like, they're doing a lot of research in stores, and there's a whole lot of war toys now. They're very popular. There's like three or four aisles. I've watched it expand over the past few months, and there's American flags on a lot of the toys, and we're talking not just army figurines now, we're talking missile launchers, like huge, you know, trucks with big missiles on them, and it's pretty freaky. And then the other thing with my friend, the Heather Lash that I mentioned, she's First Nations, but looks very, very white. And so we're doing this project called Outside Inside, or Inside Outside. I haven't decided which way, but we're building a miniature teepee. There's a lot of photographs of her playing with cowboy and Indian toys, where she's both
the cowboy and the Indian. And again, I was pretty amazed to find how many cowboy and Indian toys there are in the store still. I was showing Tamara some of the packaging tonight. There's just like pictures of the savage-looking Indians attacking the cowboys, and it's pretty crazy what you can still buy at Walmart and Toys R Us.
Yeah, and it's really interesting.
Am I going to get sued now?
And it's really interesting how people keep on promoting this and say, "Oh, it's okay for kids to buy war toys. They're just toys."
Yeah, they're just playing.
Yeah, but this.
But why do we want to get them so young? Like, why are there so many more war toys now than there were 6 months ago? That's what's really creepy to me. And also branding at that level. There's McDonald's toys, and there are little vacuum cleaners with pictures of girls pushing them, which is bad enough in itself, but then it says Dirt Devil on the vacuum cleaner, and yeah, it's pretty insane.
Yeah.
Yep. But I think important to my work is showing possible resistance to all these depressing things.
Like, yes.
Sometimes it feels really overwhelming to me when I just walk into that store and go, "Oh my God, how can you stop this? Like, there's no competing." But there are ways of resisting, and there are a lot of people who are doing it. So I find with art that people often will listen to things they wouldn't listen to if you were just telling them it or talking to them about it. My parents are an example too, like things that we might disagree on politically, but they'll come to see my photography or read my poetry and suddenly look at things a bit differently or question things they believed before. And a lot of, I think it's one of the strongest ways to reach people. Not the only way, of course, but I think it is a very strong way, especially in this time. Like, visuals are very important too, like with your paintings tomorrow. Like, I think they really affect people. You go, "Oh, you know, what's going on in Chile?" You know, or what's going on in,
I think people,
you know,
are much more aware visually too. There's just more understanding, and because their life is based on images all over the place, talking about advertising, and they have a lot more education with images. Mm-hmm. Can relate to images a lot
it's
easier.
True.
So that's where the message comes to play. So it's important. And now I guess we can turn over to Tamara Toledo. Well, I'm a visual artist, a painter. I emphasize on painting right now. I've done sculpture before, printmaking and installation, but my medium is oil paints. So when did you get started with painting? Well, I've always been an artist, I think. I've always wanted to be an artist. And painting, I started when I was able to pick up a brush, start painting on the walls of my parents. So there's no specific time, but showing, I guess, right after college, I went to Ontario College of Art, and that was 4 years ago that I graduated. What is the focus of your work? What motivates you to pick up the brush and paint and express yourself visually? Well, a lot of subjects interest me. Specifically, I emphasize on what I know and what I've experienced as a woman in the society, and a lot of history behind my painting. Specifically about my personal history as a daughter of refugees and immigrants in Canada, and also I've also explored a lot my own abuse as a woman and sexual abuse as well. But the subjects I use are very down to earth. I think they have a great impact on people because a lot of people can relate to them.
and not necessarily just women, I think.
One thing has always impressed me of your work is the nudes, whenever it's the female body that it's being explored, it's very confident. The subject is always like staring, like, you know, with confrontational, and I think that's very it's needed out there, mm-hmm. so that it's a different, you know, approach, and mm-hmm. and when they're looking at this woman, they're not just looking at her, but she's looking back.
Well, I play with the audience a lot. I think even in not just the pose itself or the confrontation of the person staring at you right back, but the positioning and how I make the audience look at the painting, the whole painting, and question at the same time the message behind all that, and the whole history behind figure painting as well. And my painting is bold, is very expressionist, and I think that gives it a lot more strength. The colors are also dramatic and sometimes straight from the tube, and that's not used a lot in realist painting either. So,
what have been the challenges that you've encountered as a woman artist?
Well, there are a lot of challenges. Just being an artist is crazy in Toronto, especially for figurative art. I've encountered a lot of isolation, not only being a woman, but also a minority group. And the subject matter I choose as well, it's not seen a lot in the Toronto art scene here. And sometimes I just think about going to somewhere else where it is a lot more appreciated. But it's very hard to be an artist and keep yourself aware that it's not just you or your work that is I guess challenging for others, and you know, a lot of trends go on, and it's not, you're not hip, you know, so that's always hard on yourself. But also I guess there isn't a lot of space for Latin American art as well. The community is very recent, and the first generation is just beginning to explore and participate in the community. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot to be done. Just last year I went for International Women's Day to Chile, back home, and I had three exhibitions at the same time, which were crazy endeavor to take. But it was great because it was the first time I took my work down there. And it was for a special occasion for International Women's Day. And you feel the difference right away, the impact and the reception you get from the painting. There's a lot more connection with the people in a different level. I'm not saying there isn't any here, but I think the messages that you get are different, which is very good in my perspective, because I always try to get a whole range of different impacts, you know. I would hate to believe that one painting only means one thing. And I believe that a piece, an art piece, gives two different interpretations.
When you went down to Chile last year, that's when the whole chaos was happening with Pinochet. He was under house arrest, I think, in London at the moment in time. Mm-hmm. And they were thinking about extraditing him to Spain. Mm-hmm. So that he could be put on trial and face all these different charges of murder that were committed under his dictatorship. Mm-hmm. And given that nowadays in Chile, the state of the government and society are not the same, I mean, after, like, the Pinochet years. And what was the response of the public, like, to your work, to the subjects in your work?
Before going there, I was doubting to take some work down, starting to self-censor myself, just because of fear. A lot of my paintings are directly against Pinochet, and at the time it was a very conflicting time to go down to Chile and show these works, but I decided to just go for it, and if they slash the painting, then, you know, there is that impact that I always wanted. So, but the overall reception was great. I was reviewed by the most conservative newspaper in Chile that supported Pinochet all along the dictatorship. So that was really good. And other left-wing, you know, magazines. And the overall audience was very happy to see the different perspective of art, and being a Chilean myself, living in Canada is a totally different way of looking at the dictatorship as well. And in Chilean society right now, there's a lot more openness in trying to think differently, there's a lot more education in the population too. They're discovering what had happened during the dictatorships. A lot of people were living in isolation, had no idea that their next-door neighbor had disappeared, or there was torture in Chile. And while I, for example, when I lived in Chile, when I was in high school, I remember trying to educate my friends what was happening right outside the door, and they never believed me. That because it was so hidden, and there was so much censorship in the media, and if you didn't go downtown, you didn't know about the protests and the killings. And so right now a lot of people are just hearing about the atrocities that happened in Chile, and also because of the news of Pinochet being arrested and all that in England. It's a strange and weird time right now in that place of the world, because there's a lot of people that are very naive about the whole situation.
And I think that, I mean, from my personal experience as well, is that when you live in a country that it's state of civil war, warred against its own citizens, there's a dictatorship, there's torture, people are disappeared. Sometimes it's not that people are not aware of what's going on or that they don't see it. It's that they know it's happening, but they just don't want to acknowledge it, because if they acknowledge it, yeah, and they get themselves involved, that means that they're taking a chance and they're risking their own lives. Because I remember my parents, you know, saying, don't look, don't say anything, just don't pay attention. Because if you do, then you'll be next, right? Mm-hmm. You'll if you look at the truth, you'll just cannot help by being shocked by the truth and maybe react to the truth, and then that makes you a target.
Yeah. And then there's this whole other mentality too, that they grew up with so much politics and repression, and that this new generation doesn't give a damn about anything that's happening in Chile or in the world, you know. There's a lot of apathy towards issues, you know.
It's good that someone like you gets to go down there and bring this pieces of history that, you know, are there for people to remember, like to recover those memories that were taken away from them, to gather that knowledge that it was, you know, hidden from them, and to face the truth of what happened.
Yeah, well, in that sense, it was a very personal project, because after 25 years, I went back, you know, strong and with the whole history behind me, and after leaving the country 20 days old, with my mom as a refugee, you know, with nothing. And, you know, there's that whole history behind the exiled that has been silenced for so long. And I think it's important for this generation of, a lot of us are artists, amazingly. We have a lot to say, I guess.
Your present current projects, you were illustrating some children's books.
And I've always wanted to illustrate for children's books, just because that's where everything starts, you know. As children, we learn so much talking about the toys, the Saunders toys, at her encounters in Walmart and Grand Toy. I think it's important to have that message across to the children. I've been hired to do specific books, but I put my own spice into them, and I think what people have liked about my illustrations is that I include a diversity of multicultural children. And I guess there isn't a lot out there, and it is really too bad, because a lot of children grow up thinking that there's only successful white children out there, you know, because all the books are with white children. And I remember that. Like, this might have been 20 years ago, but that still has a great impact in me. And even the stories themselves were very culturally based, you know. That had nothing to do with my own reality. So I try to integrate, you know, diversity into my illustrations. And hopefully I'll be able to do my own, both written and illustrated, Tamaratulel.
And then you guys were thinking about putting something together? Working together.
That's right. Yeah, we've both had experiences in our lives with someone very close to us having a brain injury, or in the case of Tamara's mother, a stroke, which is pretty much the same thing. And so we're thinking about exploring that visually, whatever that means to each of us, and either doing a show here in the next year or so, or possibly going to Bermuda or somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Taking the show, maybe both.
Yes.
And do you have an idea as to what you're going to be doing?
I have a lot of ideas, but I think once I start producing, I guess, those things change. It always does.
I find it really strange with photography as opposed to writing, because with writing, it's like my entire imagination is at my disposal. Yeah. I can create just about anything, but with photography, there has to be something physically there to take a picture of. So I'm not really sure exactly what I'm going to do in terms of exploring brain injuries, but I'm thinking of using text with photography, combining the two. One of the main things affected for a lot of people who
have acquired brain injuries is language and speech. And so that's something I think I'm going
to... And that's something I wanted to ask you, for you to elaborate more on language, because in the past year you've been exploring language.
In work?
Yeah, in your work. You took a class for
sign language. Yeah,
and you've also I guess in your reciting, like when you recite, like you do explore language, you play with it, mm-hmm. and you work with it, and you like take it apart and put it back together, and
yeah.
not only language but also your body language too,
right.
You use your corporal like self.
Language, I guess, I don't know why I'm fascinated with it. I guess, like, one thing I've been thinking about a lot lately and writing a bit about is my mother is French-Canadian, but she doesn't speak French because her mother never taught it to her. And I speak fluent French, or at least I used to. I'm a little rusty now because I learned Spanish in between and I get all tongue-tied. But anyway, I still read and write French very well. So it's interesting to me that my mother doesn't have her own language, her own mother tongue, so to speak. And so that's something I've been exploring. But I learned French quite young, in school. And of course it was standard, you know, Parisian French as opposed to Cornwall French, which it would have been had my mother taught it to me. And then I was also raised by my grandfather, who speaks Scots, so that's another form of language I've been fascinated with, the whole Scottish language and how the grammar of it is actually different from English. It's not simply, as people say, you know, dialect, as they say of a lot of other languages in the Caribbean, but actual language in and of itself, and so that's something else that's always been an influence in my life. And then learning Spanish when I was in Costa Rica and from my friends and speaking Spinglish and Spanglish. And then the sign language courses, which I have to take more of because I'm still really not that great at it. But I guess, I don't know, there's just the way people communicate is so different, and I find another fascinating thing is how you become a different person when you speak a different language. I don't know if you ever have that that experience speaking English as opposed to Spanish, where you feel like your personality slightly shifts. Mm-hmm. I find it with, especially with French, I feel like I'm a different person. I'm like, who is that girl? Who is that? So that's interesting too. I find even when we speak the same language, it's hard enough to understand what someone else is saying. So when you throw in all of these, I don't know, it's just interesting to me to look at how people communicate, all the different ways that we do.
And just to close tonight's interview, in this part of our segment, Women in the Arts and Resistance, featuring Tamara Toledo and Sandra Allen, I guess it's just appropriate to have Sandra recite one of her pieces. So here she is, Sandra Allen.
Feminist Fatale. 1. It's ridiculous to say she lured me in. To call her a seductress seems sordid. Really, her words were the most rational I'd ever heard. 2. How truth tempts. 3. She never once undid her blouse while saying, middle-class white women have a lot of work to do if the women's movement is ever to achieve any semblance of equality. Nor spread her legs across my desk with a sultry, take up space, because you can. 4. Yet her mouth music beckoned and caressed me, promising fulfillment with a consonant clicking tongue.